You are listening to the Ivy Podcast. Learn from the thought leaders in areas of strategy, innovation, negotiation, and all things leadership. We interview the Ivy League, Fortune 100, and top startups. Now, here's your host, John Carcy-Baev.
Hi, my name is Chris Venditti. I'm the Director of Strategy and Execution at Cardinal Health.
Chris, thanks so much for joining us on the Ivy Podcast today. I'm very excited to host you and talk to you a lot about, you know, your role within the organization, your background, your experience. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself, career path, where do you come from? And I want to ask a couple of questions about your current role.
No, thanks for having me, John. It's exciting to be here. So, I would say I've had a lot of different jobs, some unique experiences. I've been in now 4 different industries, and I tell people I hope healthcare is my last. It's been the most challenging and complex. So as long as they'll have me. After college, I graduated from a small college here in Ohio, Baldwin Wallace, with a finance degree. Had a couple quick jobs after graduation, but I got into the banking industry. Spent about 6 years there in a lot of different roles at Key Bank, located in Cleveland. It was kind of wild because I came into banking at the heart of the downturn, the financial downturn, right at the end of 2008, 2009, which was not a great time to be a banker. that was what was hiring and what was available. But I came in that risk management, the collections aspect of it. So we were one area of the bank that sadly was growing because there was a much higher demand for collections, the back office, the risk mitigation. And so it was at least nice there in the fact that there was a lot of growth opportunities and we were able to jump in and learn a lot about that. So my first job there was in a call center where I was taking inbound calls where you could get anything from, hey, I saw a billboard on the side of the road to get a free iPad. How do I get that? To, I can't afford to pay my bills this month. What can you do to help me? And so you had to be quick on your feet and you learned everything about the banking industry, which was great. In the call center, did back office support to eventually my last role there was acting as an internal consultant, implementing strategy, the strategic projects, all of that. And it was nice because we're able to sit with some of the leaders of the within the bank and understand what their challenges were and some of the specific aspects of their role that they were really being pushed on and being pressured to increase either productivity, decrease costs, all those basic things that are the foundations for the business that we saw. It's not all that complicated. It's some of the basic things that you need to do. Mm-hmm. Spent about 6 years in banking. Then I moved to the J.M. Smucker company. Spent about 6 or 7 years there. Smucker's was always something that was on my radar. It was within, you know, it was local to me within about a half hour drive. It had a reputation as being a great company. It was a great company to work for. And I spent the majority of my time there in probably 2 different functional areas. The first was sales operations. So within that role, my teams were really responsible for supporting sales, any of the strategic projects and processes, owning the system for sales of where they would forecast and enter most of their information, and acting really as the liaison between sales and marketing, sales and finance, sales and all those different groups that they interact with. Sales likes to sell and they don't like to do any of that other work. So any support you can give them to help run interference and support them in those areas was great. So that was really rewarding. My last role within Smucker's was in what we called revenue growth management. And that was really building out pricing strategies that really would help us to achieve profitable growth. This was a role I really enjoyed working in. I had, again, great leadership within the role. My manager was fantastic, taught me a lot about the commercial aspects of the job. Okay. I was also able to work on some of the biggest brands and name brands that folks have heard from Milk-Bone, Kibbles and Bits, Pepperoni. And then to me, the biggest joy I got from that was working with some of our largest, and I would say most unique customers is probably how I'll word it. The Amazons, the Walmarts, the Targets, the Chewies. And they were at such different levels within their maturity level from a process and from where they sat at, from how structured they were. And it was very telling to understand how we would have to work with all those different groups. So again, really, really nice, some really nice roles there. But that kind of led me to say, all right, well, what is my next challenge? And what am I really looking for? And as I was thinking about that, 3 things stood out right away. I was looking at healthcare and it became clear because healthcare was really at the precipice of some major changes. And it was ripe for some of the disruptive changes that, you know, we can talk about, but was also going to be growing for the next couple of decades. So as you think about the aging population, the fact that folks are living a little bit longer, right. We knew that this was going to be sustainable and provide growth. And then lastly, Northeast Ohio, it's a great spot for healthcare. We have some of the best physicians, the best clinics, the best provider networks in the area. The Cleveland Clinic is world famous, and that's just one of several that we have here. So it was ripe. So when I started looking at healthcare, that led me to Cardinal Health. And so Cardinal Health is, you know, it's one of the largest medical supply companies in the world and within the Fortune 15. But there's this little carve-out niche that they have called At Home. And that's the group that I belong in. And At Home is great. We really, if you think about our specific job, it's getting medical supplies directly to people in their home. Uh-huh. And we are one of the rare arms within Cardinal Health that operates directly with patients. We're a true B2C model. And it's great because we have that ability to really impact their lives and get them the things they need that they're already going through something, right? That makes their life not as easy or convenient as others would want or expect. So when we can have that ability to help impact that in a positive way and make it easier for them when they're at a point in their life when they really need it, that's a rewarding aspect for us. Right. So my role here within Cardinal Health right now, it's my current role. I'm the Director of Strategy and Execution. So the easiest way to describe that is we help commercialize and operationalize the big ideas. So I think everyone's familiar with when you started a company, there's always the group that has those brilliant genius ideas. It's like, oh, wow, that's great. If only we could do that in 2 to 3 years. My team's job is to say, all right, how do I get from today to that 2 to 3 year mark in the future? Except you typically have 6 months or 9 months because we're always trying to condense and bring things earlier. But we really serve as that group that can bring in the finance, the marketing, the sales folks and understand if we want to implement this and we want to build an operating model around this great new idea that can add all of this value to us, what are the things that we need to do and what's the playbook there to get that accomplished? And so we need to have that kind of mismatch of both the ability to see that long-term and that big picture, but also be able to translate that from a tactical lens of how we're going to implement it here within Cardinal Health At Home. Mm-hmm. So it's a unique job. It's a brand new role within this segment. Before it sat in different areas, they decided to build one specific role for it. And I've just staffed my team up. So we feel really excited to be in this role. There's not many teams that have the ability to do that in an industry as growing as ours and in our space. So we're excited and we can't wait to move forward.
Well, that's exciting. That's quite a background, quite a diverse experience you've had, different industries. Very interesting from a standpoint of that role in charge of strategy and execution. You don't come across that very often. Usually it's kind of a function or role under, you know, a broader executive, so to say, within the organization. So that's very unique. I want to talk a little bit further about this. So from your standpoint, with the team that you're currently leading or the overall organization, you know, I'm pretty sure that innovation is at the kind of is one of the core principles, the need to continuously innovate and evolve, make your products and services always better. For you, as you know, you lead that group that's in charge of, you know, strategy and execution, I'm pretty sure innovation comes, you know, at, you know, at the forefront of that. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, the strategies or, you know, the tools and techniques that really help you as an executive to really build and foster that culture of innovation, whether that's at organization level, whether that's at your team level, whether for you personally.
Sure. Well, John, I would say, I think of innovation in two different ways, right? And I think this is how we have to get folks to wrap their head around this, because too often I feel like people think, well, you have that innovation, or you have the strategy team that thinks of innovation, but innovation has to come from anyone. Because it's not just ideas. It's not this, you know, everyone has a $1 million idea, right? But it's not the ideas, it's a mindset. And so to me, I think of it in two ways. I think there's the everyday improvements. And this is just the, you know, I'm thinking of process improvements. I'm trying to drive change, better myself, become more efficient, become faster, stronger, all those things so that I can develop something faster to the customer, right? And ultimately have that in mind. Then the other piece is the true paradigm shifts, which is it's the aspirational. It's what is at the brink of possibility. And you have to have both of those, because if you only have the one, if you're only trying to tweak current state, then you're always going to live in the current environment. Customers are going to have different expectations. Those table stakes, they shift, they change, they alter. and you're still making the same product or service, and you may do it efficiently, but it's no longer what the customers need, right? So that's where you still have to have that vision of, I need to think differently from what I offer today, and I still have to swing for the fences sometimes, the home runs. But you also need to have those singles and doubles where I have to make sure that I'm not looking at building a company that doesn't exist yet, and that all of my innovation things are about 3 to 5 years from now. But meanwhile, back at the ranch, we still can't operate efficiently. I still can't ship products out successfully to my customers. So you have to have that lens of both. So the way that I tell my team, it's this is not some secret sauce. It's just, I tell them all the time, be bold, right? Like do something different today that you didn't do last week. And think about some of the things that we can really do to change and impact the customer and the patient. Because I think, again, when you only think internally of here's the innovation that works for us, that doesn't allow you to become aspirational. When you have the customer at the outset and the forefront of what you're really looking to accomplish, that's the way that you truly understand what's valuable. And I tell them all the time too, the elegance many times is in its simplicity. Right. That we don't need to have these brilliant ideas that change the world. Mm-hmm. You think about some of these, it's I just want to make things a little bit better and a little bit easier for my patient. And that little bit that I do for them can make a world of impact for where they sit, right? Any easy that they feel when you're suffering from, whether it's diabetes, you're an ostomy patient, all those different things, a little bit of ease and a little bit of just, I can take away this burden, makes a huge impact for our customers. So think, be bold and think big, but also don't be afraid to keep it simple. And that to me is kind of how we at least look at innovation from two separate ways to make sure that we're hitting the mark.
Right, right. Absolutely. No, I love those examples. And, you know, they seem simple, yet oftentimes overlooked. Where you think about innovation, usually the first things that come to mind is something grandiose, something, you know, the industry disrupting or something very big. But a lot of times, you know, things like small experiments, small things to make, you know, your own processes better are not considered as, you know, innovation per se. So that's very exciting to hear from that standpoint.
We do, and we talk about failing fast, right? Of, hey, if it's a new idea, try it. And if it works, great, then implement it and go big. But if it's not, then all right, take your lumps and say, all right, it didn't work. We learned something from it. Now the next one should be better. So it's that mindset too, right? Of if the great innovators have a really bad track record of how many things that they were successful. If the best innovators hit one or two in their entire career, and then they become the gods, right? But no one gets, 90% of my new products were successful. No one has done that, right? If you can get to 30%, you're in the Hall of Fame, right? So you just have to be ready to fail and understand that, all right, let's learn from it quickly. And then let's leverage those learnings immediately in the next wave.
All right, right. Absolutely. No, that's a great example. What are the different trends or ideas that really excite you? What are you most passionate about? What in your free time, or when you're not, you know, doing your day-to-day activities, what are you reading about? What are you researching? What are you watching for? Just curious to get your take on. It doesn't necessarily have to be specific to your industry or your role. Just in general, want to get your take on what are the most exciting things coming that you're looking at.
Sure. So, you know, like I think a lot of people, you know, it's that you try to get new information, you listen to different podcasts, you read all these different articles. And it is unique that when you think about the explosion of a lot of these different companies, it's all about just making it simpler for their customers. It's not sometimes adding something new, but it's making it simple. And, you know, you can always go back to the, you know, Uber or Airbnb, where they're not creating anything new. People have been staying in people's homes. They've been renting apartments and hotels and renting taxis for forever. It's just, how do I make this simpler and make it at the touch of a button? Mm-hmm. And that's the big piece. And again, when you think what Amazon is doing, people have been buying packages and having it shipped to their house for years. That's not a new concept. It's the fact that I can go on an easy app, I can type in something and here are my reviews. I now know here are the 5 best products at the best price. I click a button and it's here. Some cases 2 hours and a day and 2 days, but basic, I don't have to think about it.
Right.
So when I think about what excites me, it comes right back to our industry within healthcare. So in my opinion, when I think about 2021 and I think about healthcare and the pandemic, aside from maybe corporate real estate, which is going to have its own unique challenges, I would say healthcare is just ripe for the type of disruptive innovation and the paradigm shifts that we need to see. And I think as you think about what is occurring in all industries across the world is people don't want to be inconvenienced. They don't want to leave their home unless they're going out for an experience.
Right. For sure.
I don't want to go and have to go out and buy toilet paper. I don't want to have to go out and buy basic supplies. If I'm going to do that, I want it to be this experience and I want it to be unique and fun, right? If it's not that, I want it delivered to me. I want all those basic necessities given to me. And health is the most basic necessity there is. And so when we think about being able to service a patient or a customer in their home with telehealth, with, you know, clinicians that are able to do some level of, whether that's blood work in a home or have, think of, you know, an example of having an EMT or something like that come to your home, take some of the basic blood work, and then the clinician is on your iPad or on the phone or something like that, being able to see that in real time, being able to give that medical advice where I don't have to go to an ER, which no one wants to go into anymore, especially with, you know, I don't want to go to a hospital. I want to get sick and go to the hospital, right? And so you have those concerns and you want to, you know, ease the burden of some of those healthcare workers who are there. So our ability to service customers and patients in their own home and make it easy for them is absolutely something that as an industry, we need to become better with and be able to ensure that we're everywhere that our customers need us to be. And healthcare, like many of the other industries, are seeing that our patients and our customers require us to be in their homes and service them where they're most comfortable and where it's most convenient for them.
Right, right, absolutely. No, I actually personally experienced, you know, telehealth, e-health benefits, you know, just a couple of months ago where, you know, I thought I had symptoms of, you know, the COVID and all of that great stuff. And you usually don't think of that, you know, e-health or telehealth kind of as something that's, you know, actually works. You always think that you absolutely have to have, you know, have to go to, you know, the physical location and you have to go see the doctor. You got to go wait a couple hours, you know, in the waiting room and all of that stuff. But I thought that was really unique experience in terms of actually getting, like you said, on the iPad. I had, you know, giving me advice and doing a lot of, you know, that diagnosis. I thought that was, you know, that was cool. That was very innovative.
It is. It's unique. And John, it's, you know, the example I used to use at Smucker in the bank all the time, and it's dating me now. And I used to say 5 years ago. So it's now we have to go back 15 years. But what we used to always say is you just, what you don't think is possible today is going to change. And I go back to 15 years ago, if you wanted to rent a movie on a Friday night, you and the family, you had one option. You had Blockbuster. Mm-hmm. Fast forward 5 years from then, and now they don't even exist. Right. And so it's the point of where you didn't think it was possible. Oh, I have to walk all the shelves and go in alphabetical order and see what movies I want. Now it's, I want to watch a movie. I want to watch something. I click two buttons and it's there. And so what, again, used to be, and this experience now is becoming in the home of a necessity where I can still browse and pick and go through that. Hey, what's next in that treasure hunt? And I can still have that in my home and I still get all the satisfaction. And it's still the same thing now with healthcare of, we can still give that same level of care. It's just now it's adding that convenience factor too.
Right, right, absolutely. No, that, you know, you nailed it on the head when it comes to kind of the simplicity and the convenience factor. Usually, you know, those are the key ingredients of some, you know, the so quote unquote breakthrough innovation. So that's, you know, I definitely agree with you from that standpoint. When we talk about interviewing or surrounding yourself with, you know, with A players, with the winning team, building that around you, I'm pretty sure, you know, that's at the top of their minds of every executive or for every level of leadership, whether you're actively recruiting or you're not, you're always on the hunt for, you know, top talent. From your standpoint, just share with us some best strategies that are working for you when it comes to attracting the top talent. What kind of what has worked well for you? What has not? Anything that maybe recently that you were interviewing somebody, you're like, oh wow, this is an absolutely great candidate. Just curious to get your opinion on kind of what are the different strategies that you utilize.
Sure. So to me, I think two specific thoughts here. The first is anytime you come across someone that's talented, I just try to befriend them. And it doesn't matter the levels. It doesn't matter what group they're in, whether, you know, they sit in finance, they sit in sales. I'm somewhat of the mindset that a high performer can be a high performer in any category or segment within an organization. Mm-hmm. Obviously there are some, you know, there are always some unique jobs that have a very specific set of skill sets. If you're a coder, if you're working in some level where you need to know a specific, you know, HTML, something to that effect, But we're not splitting atoms in any industry that we are. And if someone's a high performer in finance, they can move to marketing, they can move to sales, they can do all those other things, and they can make it work. And so I just try that as soon as I see a high performer, I try to get in front of them, have that conversation, offer any mentoring as much as I can. But that to me is how I do that. I keep that relationship going and build that pipeline of talent. And then I try to be as the second piece is I try to be as transparent as possible in what they should expect if they join my team and what those expectations are. And I try to communicate to them up front, listen, if you join a team that I'm on, you better expect to have high expectations and that we're going to expect a high level of quality work. But the biggest thing is that I'm going to challenge you in everything you do. And I expect you to challenge me right back. I expect us to have a relationship where I can come to you and I say, hey, John, I think you missed the mark on this. There are three things that I would change here. And I expect you to tell me, no, I don't think I did. I think here's what I would do. And I think this is where I would actually look to push us in a different way too. So we have to have that challenge back and forth to ensure we do that. Right. And the last piece I tell them is they're going to be coached aggressively. And I'm purposeful in that term to say, I'm not someone who's going to let that little nitpicky thing slide to say, hey, you know, you could have worded this a little bit better, but I'll just wait to next week's one-on-one. It's let's get in front of that. And let's say, you're going to know what you did well to say, hey, this was great. And I think you accomplished what you needed to in this meeting. The one thing I would coach on is think about your wording, right? And words matter. So as you said this, I really want to push you more down this path to ensure that message is coming through. And that's what takes it from good to great. That's what makes it, you know, you got the buy-in versus we need that follow-up meeting. And so we're going to make sure that we go over those different things. And it's not always going to be about your current role. We're going to try to coach you aggressively to just become a better leader, to get your thought process to be a little bit different, because that's what I look for when I'm interviewing candidates is that thought process. It's not that they've had 10 years of experience in strategy and execution and they know healthcare and all those different pieces, right? Give me a high performer that can think about things and that they're willing to put themselves out there. I can work with those folks.
Right. Absolutely. So tell us a little bit more about, you know, your interview process. What does that look like? Give us a glimpse and, you know, types of questions you like to ask. And more importantly, what do you look for in some of the responses?
Sure. I'm sure a lot of the folks on my team, they can probably tell you that I'm a tough interviewer. And I've gotten that feedback in the past. So I don't like to give visual feedback, the head nods, the smiles, all of that. I like to kind of keep it very straight when I'm doing that because I don't want to bias them to head down a specific path. I want them to really drive me and I want to see that they're confident in what they're telling me. And what I mean by that is I try to challenge quite a bit and give them alternative thoughts and say, well, okay, you did this, but why didn't you do this? Or did you think about something along this line? And the reason I try to do that is I want to make sure they're not telling me a nice story that they want me to hear. I want to make sure that they're actually telling me something that is a real life experience they had that now helps shape their way of thinking. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, I just want to know how they think. I want to know how they're going to react to problems, to difficult situations, to difficult people, and that they can think on their feet and come up with a solution very quickly that takes in the things that they just heard. So that they listened and picked up on some of the context clues. They reacted quickly, said, all right, I heard this, this, and this. I'm going to summarize that quickly. And I'm going to come out with I think here are our next steps. What do you guys think? And they can use that to help influence and drive things forward. Because ultimately, I don't want people that are just great with ideas. I need folks that can execute. And they can take a whole bunch of complex ideas, summarize that quickly, and understand what those next steps are, and do that in a way that then drives the conversation forward.
Yeah, that's you know, interesting perspective, and a lot of the, even the nonverbal cues, though, you know, those definitely do matter. Is, you know, whether you're the interviewer or you're the interviewee, and it's also kind of to that extent when interviewing. A lot of times, the hiring managers more focus on kind of the lack of weaknesses, so to say, in the sense that what can I tolerate versus what are the different strengths that we're missing on our team or on, you know, on our group or our organization, and instead focusing more on that. And on the other hand, is also giving the opportunity for the candidate to interview you as well, from a standpoint of, you know, who's the leadership, who's, you know, leading the organization, who am I joining, what type of culture, at least getting in the sense of that. I think those are the type of, you know, dynamics that really make it successful.
Yeah, it's unique. John, I mean, I think we're all looking for the unicorns, right? The people that they're visionary, but they can write an SOP. They can build exceptional relationships, but then they're skilled in data and always, you know, use data-driven decisions, right? And we all want those. And those people have already, they're already running their own companies and they're already the GMs of groups. And so to me, I just really look for people that the questions I ask, try to get down to a couple different things. It goes to that mindset and their thought process, but I'm looking for people that are trusted in their current roles. I want to see that they've been given trust, that they've earned it. Because to me, I'm a hands-off manager. I'm not someone who will micromanage. So I need people that can join my team that I can send them off on a problem with minimal guidance and say, I need you to take accountability. I need you to own getting this completed. And I don't need you to be the expert there. And you can come back and ask for questions, but I need you to at least go and get the boat off the shore and get to a spot where it's like, all right, I don't know what to do now. Here's what I think. Now let's come in and regroup, but they need to have that courage to go out there and jump in an area they've never gone to before with people they may not have known. Hear, again, a lot of different information, be able to summarize it to say, all right, I think this is the path I need to head down. What do you think? And that to me is, that's what I ultimately try to get to within the interview and that getting to that mindset and where they can eventually become a trusted member on my team. John, you're muted.
I'm sorry. Yeah, that, absolutely. That's, you know, it makes perfect sense in a sense when, you know, finding the right type of candidate, finding the right type of talent. It's always, you know, it's an interesting dynamic in the sense that, you know, there can never be a perfect candidate, right? But it's also really trying to understand what are the different weaknesses and strengths and what are you missing on the team. I think those, you know, there's a famous quote that I really, you know, I use that all the time by Ben Horowitz in his book, The Hard Thing About the Hard Things, where there's an entire chapter dedicated to, you know, interviewing and recruitment. And he talks a lot about that, focusing on the lack of strengths versus, you know, lack of weaknesses when trying to find an interview executives or the candidates of every level. Chris.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was going to say, I just listened to a podcast by Malcolm Gladwell, and he was talking about how we're not as good as selecting interview candidates. And he basically said, he's like, I'm someone that once I get it down to a pool of three, it's fine. Yeah, whomever, it doesn't matter because it's a crapshoot anyway. And I don't know if I can ever get to that level of confidence and the lack of confidence. But it's unique in the fact that you never really know, and there is never a perfect candidate. And it's the devil you know versus the devil you don't know in many cases, where you're willing to take a leap on an external candidate, which I don't always agree with. To me, you need to have that blend. But you really just, that's why I try to find the mindset. And as long as it's a mindset, then at that point, it's on me to coach and to develop and to get them skilled in what they need to do. But give me a high performer any day of the week and I'll live and die with that.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Because you don't want somebody that, you know, you have to tell them what to do. You want somebody who can come and tell you, you know, here's my way of fixing, you know, that particular problem, or here's, you know, my opinion on resolving this particular situation. So that's, you know, that goes very far. From a standpoint of what do you read? Where do you get your most information? What are your sources and what are the different platforms where you get your most content from? Just curious to get, you know, the inside information as far as kind of whether that's learning, whether that's just informational or anything that you consume on a daily basis. What are the different sources that you use?
Great question. I mean, I'm a big podcast listener. I'm a big fan of Freakonomics. I wish there were new episodes that came out every day. That's a big one. The Revisionist History by Gladwell, again, is one that it's unique. I like to get new information, but it has to be, it can't be dry. Mm-hmm. I will get bored very quickly. I can't read textbooks anymore. Those days are long gone. So there has to be something that helps. So the newsletters, you know, the short kind of, you know, let us get you the real quick updates are really great. I love the two newsletters right now that I read every single day. One is called The Hustle. The other one is called Robin Hood Snacks. Again, from just a broader business to a financial update, they give it to you in a very digestible, quick and easy way. like that. Obviously, we have a lot of industry standard newsletters as well within the healthcare industry. Those get into some of the nuts and bolts that you know, aren't the sexiest as well, but are just necessary. But I like articles, quick articles that I can read in 5-10 minutes, you know, in between meetings and everything like that, as well as, you know, just always try to have one or two books kind of on the nightstand that I'll go through with. That then get me away from my guilty pleasure reading of like the, you know, the horror thrillers or, you know, the detective novels and that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I'm with you, especially, you know, micro learning, you know, something quick and easy, get straight to the point, no fluff around this. You know, I think we're all, you know, definitely all about that, especially, you know, you mentioned the hustle, you know, I'm a subscriber as well. I love, you know, anything that's has to do with, you know, building, you know, the personal finance to building the passive incomes and diversifying. For me, that's, you know, very unique, very interesting. But, you know, when we talk about platforms, kind of the newsletters and those things that really get to the meat of that immediately, I think those that grab people's attention. So it sounds like you follow very similar.
Exactly right. I don't have time to get to page 70 before you get to like, Give me now, right?
Right, absolutely. And unfortunately, a lot of books these days, it's, you know, most of the books you can probably condense to like, you know, a matter of like maybe a chapter or two, where there's, you know, there's so much fluff around that, that actually becomes an actual book. So that's pretty interesting how those things work.
Exactly right, yeah.
Awesome, Chris. Well, I know you're a very busy guy. We really appreciate your insights, your information, that everything you had shared with us. I know it was a short conversation, but very, you know, insightful. I learned quite a bit from this. I look forward to staying in touch with you, and perhaps we can do another episode in about a year or so to see how much have changed, how much have transpired. And I would love to do that with you.
Yeah, John, that sounds great. Thanks for having me. Anytime. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.